Olin, I don't advise listening to me unless you can listen to your heart at the same time. And additionally, use your mind to give attention to how what I say compares to what your heart is telling you. And what am I telling you today on February 7th, 2023? I'm telling you that the mother planet has weeping eczema. The planetary mother, that great animal, has a skin condition. In case you don't know, weeping eczema is a well-known skin condition that is characterized by blisters that appear on the skin. They're itchy, and if they're scratched or if they break open spontaneously, then they exude or ooze a whitish or yellowish pus. Hence, it is called weeping eczema. Now, there are many variations of this condition, and some of them involve infection. So I can assure you that the skin condition of the mother planet does involve an infection. So, with that assertion, I put you before a question, or several questions. How exactly can we detect the skin of the mother planet? And what would be the symptoms or the evidence of weeping eczema in her skin? And finally, of course, what would be the cure for this condition? In order to take you into the depths of this situation, I'll do something that sorcerers often do, using magical words, words of invocation. You know, a lot of magic and sorcery throughout all the ages, everywhere you look, is tied up with words, the names of things, and the magic, for good or otherwise, that is carried in these names. So here are two words from the Aztec language, Nahuatl, a version, a dialect. There were many dialects of Nahuatl. And the other words that a sorcerer would use to conjure into your minds the neuro-linguistic channels that open your mind to what I'm talking about. Nanahuatzin and Xipetotec. Nanahuatzin, Xipetotec. Those are names of Aztec deities, and they are intimately connected with the complicated, highly complicated scenario of El Quinto Sol, the fifth sun, you see. They are inherent to the mythological narrative of the fifth sun, which I am not going to repeat, and I will make no attempt to teach you that narrative or to interpret it. I will simply draw some cues and clues encoded in that narrative to your attention, if you don't mind. Or even if you do, WTF, there's nothing you can do about it. If you heard those words, you say, they're now in your NLP. And they will do what they do under the direction of a sorcerer who knows how to use them. Now, these two deities are connected with the main themes of the narrative of the fifth sun, which is the age in which we live. Olin, earthquake, movement, change of heart. And among those themes and motifs, you find sores on the face, the flaying of skin, pestilence, and events in the atmosphere of the earth and in the temperature, in the metabolic temperature of the earth, that find their reflection in certain physical conditions on the planet. It's a complex myth. So just bear in mind that if you were to go and investigate that myth, you will find it's all about sores, pestilence, and even flaying of skin, because Xipe-Totec is the flayed god of the Aztecs. And I'll have something to say about flaying human bodies in a moment. But even before I get to that, does it suggest anything to you? It seems certainly historians would say, and most people would agree, this is a horrific rite practiced by the Aztecs. They flayed their victims alive, right? Oh, that couldn't happen today. Oh, no, not a chance. It couldn't be that anyone in our world today, any sane human being, would be willing for a high price to flay alive another human being. And even more bizarre, how about human beings, human animals, people, even young people, who go before the sacrificial knife voluntarily to be flayed of their body parts? Oh, that could never, ever happen in our time. Anyway, I digress. Now I'm going to take a moment to do something that might appear rather silly. Back some years ago, when I did a series of YouTube talks called Mandela Effect Decoded, I brought up a phenomenon which I called Sophianic Baby Talk. And in describing and demonstrating how that works, I explained that due to neoteny, which is the condition of the human animal to be born long before it is matured, the frontal cerebral cortex of the human animal is highly vulnerable and highly immature for a long time. And you can describe the development of the frontal cortex by dividing it into two stages, the pre-verbal stage and the post-verbal stage. So when human children begin to acquire language and speak actual words like dada or mama or nana, that means that there is a transformation happening in their frontal lobe circuits. But in the 1.5 or 2 years before they do speak, there is a lot of activity going on in those circuits. And that activity occurs when parents use baby talk. So baby talk is typically just phonemes like ooh-ooh, ah-ah, coo-coo, like that. They are not words, but they are phonemes, sound units, which actually affect the formation of the frontal cortex profoundly, even before the capacity of language is acquired due to the maturity of those cerebral circuits. So let's look at these two words, these two names, as if we were looking at baby talk, nanahuatzin. What does that suggest to you? It has three syllables. Four. Na, na. What? Seen. Well, those are almost words. In fact, they are words. Nana is a common word for a girl or a woman or a mother or grandmother. What is equivalent to the word what? And seen or seen is a form of the verb to see. So you could put that name into a question, and you could put that question to your supernatural, non-human mother, the planet, and you could ask her, Nana, what's seen? Nana, what do you want us to see? And she might answer, I want you to see that I have weeping eczema. Now let's go to the next name. Xipetotec. It's spelled X-I-P-E because the X in transliteration of the Nahuatl is a S-H sound. Xipetotec. Well, what do you hear in there? It's baby talk. But there is a word there, maybe a couple. Certainly there is the word sheep. Then there's a word A, the letter A. I'll get to that in a moment. What does A stand for? Well, it stands for the word that defines humanity as a species, the anthropine species, Xipe. And then you have Totec. What is Totec? Well, toe is a word, isn't it? Like a toe on your foot, or to toe or to pull, to toe something, to entrain something. And tech is also a word. I have a tech assistant who helps me in my school. So you see how the Sophianic baby talk provided by these ancient Aztec names could be translated into a current message. And what is the second message? Second message is that Xipe, those who belong to the human species who act like sheep, are being entrained by technology, Totec. And that if you asked Gaia Sophia, please explain Xipe Totec to me, she might say, well, I'm trying to tell you that that imaginary number in the billions of human animals who act like sheep and they are therefore just followers are being towed or entrained by tech, by technology. And she might add, because she is a wise and generous goddess, that this phenomenon, this event that is happening, is actually the cause of her weeping eczema. So there in those two names, there's a lot of encoded information. And you don't have to go back and look at the Aztec codices in order to draw the wisdom of the Aztecs to your attention. Because if that wisdom, like any other ancient wisdom, ever was valid, then it is valid today in the context of contemporary life. And that's the challenge to understand. Not what it meant before, but what it means now, right now. At 14 minutes, I'm going to close this YouTube preview of the talk. But I advise you, as before, that you can find the talk, complete talk, for free on Nemata in Planetary Tantra. And I will also caution you about what's coming. It's a good practice in this case that I preview the talk and continue it elsewhere, because what I have to tell you in these talks could probably not go on YouTube or almost anywhere else on the internet. I begin in the second talk about how to observe the affliction of weeping eczema. And then in the third talk, again on the theme of the fifth sun, I'll get to the cure. And I caution you beforehand that it's likely that the cure is not something that will come easily to you. And you might find when I get to that talk that you have a resistance to hearing about the cure for the great mother's weeping eczema. So it's a test of your sanity, your sobriety, a test of your moral fiber, and a test of your courage in facing the current condition of the human races. So here you are in Planetary Tantra on Nemata, the Sophianic School of Arts and Sciences. And I invite you to recall, if you dare, or even to pronounce these two names, Nanahuatzin Xipe-Totec, Mother, what's seen? What am I seeing? Child, you are seeing the sheep people of humanity dragged by technology to their oblivion. That's how a sorcerer living today, you know, like Tezcatlipoca, the Lord of the Smoking Mirror, would translate Nahuatl to the world in English. I have a great affinity with the Aztecs, by the way. I have a bizarre affection for them, and the Toltecs as well, and the Maya too. All those Mesoamerican families, Mesoamerican tribes, are dear to me. And the people who live in those lands now, today, are also dear to my heart in certain ways. The Aztecs have gotten a really bad rap through history. Bear in mind that everything that was reported about them mostly came through the Christian friars and missionaries who decimated them and wiped them out, genocided them, burned their books, except for a precious few. And some of those few contain pictorial representations and hieroglyphs of the narrative of the fifth sun. The Aztecs were cruel. I'll get back to that word. Probably they were cruel in their way, in their time, in their setting. And they were certainly bizarre. They used to snort raw chocolate powder. They were chocoholics. They were addicted to chocolate, which induces a condition known as, I think, left brain epilepsy. So they would dance. They were known for dancing. The warrior's dance was a frenetic state of possession by the chemicals in raw chocolate. And they used to dip skinned rats in hot chocolate and eat them for dessert. They were a funny crew, but they also invented popcorn, and we can all be thankful for that without question, right? So weeping eczema is a condition of the skin, an affliction characterized by pustulant blisters. Now, isn't that a beautiful picture? I mean, there are various diseases and conditions that can happen to human animal or other animals, which are not pretty. But I can't think of much that would be uglier than a face full of pustulant blisters. So if these pustulant blisters, these horrific extrusions of pus are now happening in the skin of the planetary mother, where are they? How can you detect them? Have you ever seen one erupting pus in your face? Well, maybe you have, but maybe you didn't have the description of it that I'm providing to you now. First of all, I have to ask, of course, well, what is the skin exactly of the planetary mother? Bear in mind that I'm not using that merely as a figure of speech, so not merely a metaphor. There is something material in nature that is the equivalent to the skin of the planet. And what is that? Well, it's the membrane of the livable atmosphere. And by most estimates, it is a layer, a very, very thin layer surrounding the planet of about 3 miles in height. So if you go above 3 miles or you're mountain climbing and you go above a certain height, you get into the death zone. And some people have climbed to the summit of Everest, even some women, without the use of supplementary breathing apparatus. It can be done, but it's extremely dangerous, and a considerable number of them didn't survive the way back, you see. So it's just a fact that the human animal and other animals are designed to survive in the livable zone of the atmosphere, in sheathing the Earth, and that it's quite shallow. Above it is the troposphere, the ionosphere, reaching out hundreds of miles into space, but it's only about 5 miles thick, and that is the epidermis, or the dermis and epidermis of her skin. So if we're going to look for signs of weeping eczema, we have to look there, in the biosphere, in the livable envelope of the planet. Well, look around. What is in that envelope? Well, there's all natural life, right? Plants, trees, rivers, mountains, all of the phenomena of nature, all of the millions of species who live, from insects to large animals to the human animal. We're all inhabitants of the livable layer of the biosphere. That's her skin. So look around. Look outside. Look in the city streets. Look in offices, schoolrooms. Or look at nature. Look at the fields, the cows in the fields. Look at the wild animals in the Serengeti. Look at the polar bears. First thing we have to determine is, do we find evidence of this weeping eczema among the other forms of animal life? None of what's seen. What are we seeing? Where are we seeing the evidence of your weeping eczema? Do we see it, as I say, in cats, cows, and giraffes, and butterflies, and black mambas in Africa? No, we don't. As far as possible, they continue their life cycles as independent of the human species as they can manage, right? Hopefully. We don't interfere with their life cycles and their habits. So then we turn our eyes to Shipe. She gives you the explanation. Who is being dragged? Who is being dragged? What animal is being dragged, towed, by technology to its oblivion? Well, the obvious example is the human animal, because it's our species and spectrum of the races that is most deeply involved with AI, IT, and all forms of electronic technology, isn't it? So it makes sense that we would look to the human animal and to individual specimens of human animals around us to see the evidence of her eczema. Let's apply a little imaginary experiment here. Suppose you go out somewhere, would be in a city, or in the country, if there was a large gathering of people. Go somewhere into a large gathering of people and look at these human animals one by one. Look at their face, look at their bodies, their skin, their appearances, their hair, and observe the way they speak. Observe the way they express themselves, the expressions on their faces, what comes out of their mouths. In other words, look at their behavior. If it is true that some part of the human species carries the weeping eczema of the mother, then you could see it, you could detect it in their behavior and in their appearances. Right? Am I making sense? And so what can you observe? Well, I'll tell you what I observe. When I look at a crowd of people, when I'm present in the streets, in a supermarket, in a park, anywhere where there's a large grouping of other anthropoids, I can see clearly two different kinds of behavior. On the one hand, there are TADs, I'm going to say TADs because I hate that word, people. TADs is planetary tantra slang for human animals. And see, I see some TADs who appear to be going around minding their own business. And they're enjoying themselves and looking at what's around them. They're not interfering with anyone else. They're not harassing anybody. They're just following that old, tired old cliche, well, live and let live. Do as thou wilt, as it harm none. And they're not harming anyone, and they're not threatening anyone. And that's what they're doing. But then again, when I look closer, I see that there is a proportion of the population that isn't acting that way at all. And I distinguish these other human animals, these TADs, by a number of telling features. One is, they're ugly. And they're not just ugly by nature, although they might be, but they are ugly by choice. So in that gathering that we're meandering through right now, you and me, you detect immediately specimens of humanity who are outstanding because they've made themselves look ugly. And they do this rather in the fashion of primitive peoples by costume and by face markings and by hairdo. So they have colored their hair and they have decorated their faces with rings in the nose and things of that sort. And they have, they dress in a way that draws attention to their ugliness. Not in the way that ordinary people dress. The other group who are on the live and let live policy, well, they may dress badly, they may dress like slobs, but you can be indifferent to that. Doesn't matter. And if you see someone who's dressed really well and classy, you admire that and nod and give them a smile of approval. But no, this other group of TADs, who you may now assume are the infected TADs who are causing the weeping eczema, are noticeably ugly and they have the intention to make themselves noticed and to bring your attention to their physical ugliness and the ugliness of their gestures, and of the way they dress. and of what they do to their bodies in the parts of their bodies that you can see, and even what they do to their bodies beneath the clothes in places that you can't see, they'll let you know what they're doing there. Although they haven't yet got to the point of actually exposing what they're doing to themselves in those private areas above and below. But there's plenty of talk going around about what they're doing, and they're extremely proud about it. They want you to know about it. And they demand that you address them in a certain way. They demand your respect. This is one of the great signs that is infallible. If I'm standing by a pond feeding the ducks and someone steps up to me on the right, not in my personal space, but close enough, we look each other up and down, we nod, and we can respect each other. We respect our distance. I don't impose on him or her, and likewise, he or she doesn't impose upon me. And if we interact a little more deeply, well, the occasion to develop respect might occur, because those who are not infected know that demanding respect from another person is a no-no. It is against human nature and human decency. So that's how I might interact with someone at the edge of the pond, but then someone shows up on my left and I say something casually, and then I'm told that I didn't address them correctly. I'm told that I misgendered them. And then that tad begins to accost me and to insist that I must respect them. I must give them respect that has not been earned. Respect is earned. This is a fundamental principle of human morality. They don't care about that. They demand respect, and they demand to be treated even as a privileged class and to be given so-called rights that are above and beyond the range of rights given to the general mass of people. Now, this behavior is a glaring red sign that you are looking at a pustulant blister. And that human animal who behaves in that way is indeed no longer a natural and healthy microbial unit in the skin of the earth, but a blistering puster. And they blister. They blister and they threaten. And they exude pus, and they will spew pus on you. So you have to be careful, stand back, and make sure that you're out of range, because they're erupting with pus, and there is no humanity left in them. What causes them to erupt with pus is that they have no humanity left in their bodies. And so from the viewpoint of the Aeonic Mother, they are microbial agents in her skin that need to be rejected. And the way to reject them is to bleed them out. So for her, weeping eczema is an exorcism, and it is an act of purging from her system the human cells in her skin, which are no longer sustainable. Now, I thought of doing a talk, which I would title, get this, Tick-Tock-Alypse. We're in the middle of a Tick-Tock-Alypse. And what is the Tick-Tock-Alypse about? Well, it so happens that technology, remember that? Toltec, the entraining technology that is dragging human animals to their oblivion, uses this technological medium to do it. That implies, of course, that without the influence of this technology, this condition would never have arisen. You see? So the root cause is the technology to which human animals become addicted. It rots out their humanity. It turns them into ugly, righteous, entitled, blistering pustules. And then they turn around and maybe try to inflict their condition on other people. But I don't think that's actually working. Something that you typically see in the theater of the tick-tockalypse is a pustulant animal, a pustulant cell, standing in front of an iPhone or a camera alone, maybe in their room, in their kitchen, in their bedroom, or in their car. And there they are alone, and they're talking to the camera, the photographic device, which is tech, right? They're not talking to another living person. And as a matter of fact, I think it is extremely unlikely that they could talk to another human person in the way that they talk to the camera. So they talk to the camera, and they say all kinds of insane things, and they display their ugliness and their vile, disgusting, and repulsive appearance and behavior as if it were something to be glorified, and they demand that other people respect it and step aside and let them have their way so that others follow their rules and use the right pronouns, I say. But I ask you, what do you think? There are countless, millions of TikTok videos like this, right? Promoting the transgender agenda, right? And I ask you, what do you think? How many of those individuals who post them for public view on the internet could actually behave that way in front of another non-infected human being or a group of people on the street? No, they can't. They don't. They simply do it using the aid of technology. They are addicted to the technology. They think that the technology gives them a voice and a presence in the world. It doesn't. You cannot meet another person in the virtual. You cannot meet another living person on Facebook or TikTok. There are no living people on TikTok. They are simply virtual or archontic replications of people. But they do accurately replicate the creature that is making that video, and they display all of the vile, righteous, entitled, blistering, pustulant behavior of the blisters of weeping eczema. But that's not the only place you see them. It's low-hanging fruit to go after TikTok. It's so painfully obvious, and the ugliness, beware, be careful, because the ugliness could cause you to bring up your lunch. It is totally vomitatious. But elsewhere too, remember, we're walking through a crowd, we're walking through different groups, and as we observe and ask ourselves this question, Nana Huatzin, say, oh, well, there are other tads, other human creatures who are exhibiting the same kind of behavior, actually, but they don't have the same bodily makeup. They don't have the same cosmetic makeup and the colored hair and the other accoutrement. They appear to be more or less human. They wear suits and ties. They have $400 haircuts, some of those women who speak on media platforms, let's say. So it's important to bear in mind as we go around detecting the eczema that in some cases we see that it's really, really ugly, but in other cases it's been covered up by makeup. So the pustulant blisters are there, but they've got a ton of makeup on them. What's it called? I used to know the terms. What a woman puts on her face to cover up skin flaws or to give it a different tone. What is that called? Foundation. Yeah, they have a foundation. A foundation makeup. And on the other hand, their attempt in their delusion, because they're sick animals, to conceal the fact that they are pustulant blisters, is to present their body according to a certain norm of what is acceptable and attractive. So they wear suits and ties, they wear expensive clothes, and they do their best to not to appear ugly. But to the discerning eye, they're just as ugly as the TikTok trans grifters who broadcast themselves to you through the technological medium of photography, which, by the way, is an extremely dangerous tool when misused. And it has been mostly misused since a decade or so after it was invented. For instance, using photography, still or moving, to sell things is very, very dangerous. You know, if I'm looking for a new car and I know that I can go to the internet and put in a make and a model and I can get pictures of the car, that's just fine. I love to see some pictures of the car from different angles. Accurate, unembellished photographs. But when you see an advertisement for a new car, that's not what you see, is it? You see the use of technology dragging people into a make-believe world rather than simply showing them the product to be purchased. So the evils of photography are very great. And when it comes to the totec or the entrainment by our contact technology, well, the video medium and the visual medium is, of course, the main window of attack. Photography has been weaponized to dehumanization and deceit, you say. So, to round this out, so far, we've just been walking around looking at what you might call euphemistically and with a considerable gesture of generosity, our fellow human beings. You see, I don't have a lot of fellow human beings. And I don't look for fellow human beings anymore. I look for Xipe Totec. I look for the population of A10, you see, A10, that is going into oblivion. And I look for the higher mutation to A11. So you see, even in the, what am I going to call it, even in the Gnostic jargon of planetary tantra, the letter A, Xipe, has been in use for a long time. A lot of people already know what A10 is and what A11 is, and they know that the wisdom goddess, in her way, is handling the situation of this infection by letting the infected cells die off, that's called apoptosis, and by bringing forth an epigenetic mutation of a regenerated genome, A11. And this is a fact. This is a phenomenon in nature at large and within the human psyche that I and others have been tracking for quite a while. So there is a cure underway for the weeping eczema. And I've not spoken precisely and brutally about what this cure is. But one thing that I can tell you before I get to it in the next talk is that it's not what you might call a counter-genocide. You know, I don't endorse genocide. I see clearly and brutally that there is an imaginary number of human animals who are not going to make it to the end of this kalpa, nor will their progeny make it. Apoptosis, which is the shedding of dead cells, will take them out and all their progeny and future generations as well, and bring down the population of the planet. And the Aeon Sophia does that on her own scale and on her own terms, and to a great extent, what she does is inconceivable to the human mind. But then there is what we do. There is what her witnesses and allies can do that is complementary to her spectacular act of mutating the species to A11. So that is the cure. Part of the cure goes to those who are not infected. The responsibility for the cure, for the cure within human limits goes to those who are witnesses and allies of the mother's power and who can face the horror of weeping eczema. So no, I'm not going to propose extermination. Not at all. I'm not even going to say anything that could remotely be construed as incitement to violence. Extermination is not a cure. Although, who knows, it could be complementary in some way. And violence, blind, unaimed violence, is not the cure either. To know what the cure is, I'll take you back to the Aztec peoples. However you might characterize them, and they were bizarre, and they had, by the way, an extremely beautiful side. They loved poetry. They loved natural beauty. They loved flowers. They had a profound aesthetic, which, as far as I know, has not been revealed by many scholars of Maya Aztec civilization, except for one. And his name was Leon Portilla, Miguel Leon Portilla. But apart from that, yeah, okay, they were cruel. I guess you'd have to say it doesn't take much of an argument to prove or to convince anyone that cutting open someone's chest and pulling out their beating heart and then flaying them and throwing the flayed body down the stairs of the temple, I guess you could probably characterize that as rather cruel, right? And nobody wants to get involved in that. Nobody wants to be doing anything like that if that's what the cure entails, right? Well, maybe. Maybe. That remains to be seen as I conclude with the third talk on the narrative of the fifth son.